Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It's good Tuesday. Countdown towards Thursday night with the Cardinals and Vikings. Cannot wait for that. Thanks for being with us. We have Chris Cartman coming up with Doug Haller in studio. Doug Haller, AZ Central Sports ASU insider, and Chris Cartman, two of the best insiders. Chris, of course, with SunDevilSource.com. Both will be in studio. That's in about 30 minutes. Peter King's going to join us in about 10 minutes. And I got to talk to Peter. Of course, Peter's the best of the best when it comes to national NFL insiders, the Monday morning quarterback with NBC on Sunday Night Football. The Cardinals get flexed again to another Sunday night game. NBC's fallen in love with the Cardinals. There's no other way to put it. And they may get flexed some more because how do you not flex? They flex the Philadelphia game. How do you not flex Cardinals-Packers or Cardinals-Seahawks, I would guess?
It's a network decision, though. I guess some of the networks don't want to be bumped by NBC. I don't know how much flexibility they have, but just in everything I saw on Twitter, yes, it could happen, but don't be surprised if it doesn't. Well, that's why they pushed this Philly game down into primetime.
Well,
into primetime.
Well, because Philadelphia beat New England.
Yeah, that helps.
If Philadelphia doesn't beat New England over the weekend.
Chip Kelly, it's big ratings, big market.
You got some star appeal with the Cardinals on the offensive side, and even on the defensive side. Tyrann Mathieu. I was talking to people at Marley's. They do that that Big Red Rage show. They said that Tyrann Mathieu easily was the biggest draw this year of any of the players that have come out. Tyrann Mathieu just kills it. And I've seen that, too, that his story just resonates more with people. It's nothing against the other guys. It's just that's the view on there.
And the NFC West, NFC East, Brad, is so good. I mean, why wouldn't you want after last night's Monday night thriller? It was a thriller, though. It was a classic.
Sure,
in the last 4.5 minutes. If you watched any before that, it was anything.
You know what
classic.
I did last night? I found myself watching the Suns game because they were so bad early, and I wanted to see what my guy Keith was going to do, and I wanted to see how much the broadcast was going to mention Jerry Colangelo, which was zero. And then they were just horrendous in the third quarter. Like, I'm thinking today, when they come off this road trip, that there may have been something going on today. They were so bad in the third quarter last night. Because Jeff's still sitting there. He's a lame duck this year, the way things are going. And there was a story that circulated yesterday, midday, I saw, where Markieff Morris was linked to Houston. Please take him. Please. We will give you anything. You want a saguaro? I will pack it for you. Do you want some nuts, or do you want some red rocks from Sedona? Please, a bag of rocks and Markieff. I am down with that. I will fund it through Sports 360 AZ to get Markieff out of here.
For the rights to Ralph Sampson and Mario Elliott.
Anybody.
How does that sound?
Yeah, sure. A signed autograph sock, you know? Something like Sam Cassell, as much of a nitwit as he was when he was here. You know, a Robert Horry jersey from the Rockets. Anything. I found myself, I was not into, I don't need to see Redskins Cowboys to make my week complete. I am one of those people that can watch more than just a pro football game. I'm not the guy that's under assault on the NFL. But I am the guy that said, there are plenty of other things going on with my time. I found myself talking on the phone to some people at the winter meetings last night because I am fascinated with what the Diamondbacks are doing. Just having Zach Greinke here changes everything. And I was big on them last year. Jerry Colangelo named to the front office of the 76ers. I mean, how are we supposed to react to that when he had some tie or title or consultant or something with the Suns? And I get, it's like 99% very much, why did the Suns not do something with Jerry? And then there's that 1% that said, well, he sold the team and Robert shouldn't have him around. I don't know. If Jerry has an itch to scratch to be involved in the NBA, rather than going to a team that has a bunch of kids that has one win, he could have just stayed right here at the Biltmore and driven on downtown and we could have all played nice. But instead, let me phrase it this way very clearly. A Phoenix Suns Hall of Famer had to go to Philadelphia to scratch his itch when the team here hasn't done anything in 5 years. Anything. I'm not talking about corporately. The Suns are terrific. Suns Charities is terrific. If you talk to me face to face and sit down with me about this, you would know that I'm very big on where the Suns are within the community. I don't think that's forced. Clearly, it's a different culture down there with Robert. That's not what this is about. He's going to run his business the way he wants to run his business. And he's doing very well running his business in every facet except winning. He doesn't have it in winning. He has it in money. And some people would just rather be really good and not be good on the court, but be really good with their ledger sheet. And those are people that just aren't going to change the way they do business. I have nothing personal with Robert. This is everything with, if Jerry had an itch to scratch, why didn't you just call him? Or why didn't he call you? Or was there some place where the two could have met in the middle? Or is it just, you know, it's just turning the page back and admitting that we've screwed this thing up? Well, I'm watching last night. It was a nice win. I would say last night was a signature win for the season for the Suns, because all their other victories, if you go down the line, they were flawed. The Clippers game here, Chris Paul didn't play. When they beat Sacramento, DeMarcus Cousins didn't play. You had teams on back-to-backs. So winning last night when you scored 10 in the third quarter, they were tied at halftime. And I mean, they were so bad in the third quarter, so bad in the third quarter. But in the fourth, it's like the Bulls just went to sleep. And Jeff Hornacek clearly loves Devin Booker. Devin Booker's fun to watch. Their guards are, they're going to live and die by their guards this year. If they would have landed LaMarcus Aldridge, if they would have, I could go back over the last 5 years, if they would have done this or would have done that, because I'm fine with where the coach is. But they have this load on the team that doesn't do anything, that sits on the end of the bench, and he's just killing them. So they got fortunate last night that they came all the way back, that their guards got hot, that the Bulls looked like a team that couldn't figure it out at the end. You know, Knight and Bledsoe and Booker, they were great. And Talinovich's shot at the tip, that's just a hustle play. I like seeing the hustle play. It's their best win of the season by far.
And it's a nice bounce back too, because remember when the Bulls came to Phoenix in mid-November, everyone was sort of earmarking that as this is a time where the Suns on the big stage can actually make a statement. They ended up losing by six. I mean, they were way behind. They came back, and sort of like last night, just different result. So
they host Orlando tomorrow night. I'm fine with that. You know, the Cardinals game against the Vikings, Adrian Peterson sounded off. We're going to have Fitz's dad tomorrow, right? Is that the deal? So Larry Fitzgerald's dad comes on with us from time to time, and he's a part of the media in Minneapolis. I actually sit next to him at games when my seat is right next to his. And so we're going to talk to Fitz about some things that are off the beaten path, but Adrian Peterson clearly will be one of them, because he's not happy or wasn't happy last week. I watched in Vegas on Sunday. I watched most of the Seahawks-Vikings. That was the game that was up on the big screen. All the other games were on little screens at the sportsbook that I was at, the two sportsbooks I was at. They were all into the Seahawks and the Vikings. And man, Minnesota just looked dreadful. So they come out here. It's a bigger game for them. I'm going to ask Peter about that here in a couple of minutes. We'll have Peter King with us. The Steve Sarkisian story. I got time to get into this. So did you hear that Sark is suing USC now? And when I first heard this story, it was, well, okay, that's interesting. I need to learn more about this, because the easy early response would be, okay, it's a money grab by a guy who's sick. Well, in the state of California, you cannot fire someone because they have a disease. His basis for this lawsuit against USC, for suing USC, is alcoholism is his disease, and that he should be getting several million dollars in severance because he was fired. So I talked to some friends over there on the media side that are around the USC program, and the word is that USC is going to have to settle this out of court, that he's going to get money. But the basis is alcoholism is a disease.
And nice little loophole, huh?
And in the state of California.
I mean, it is the law, but coincidentally, it is a nice little loophole.
Coincidentally, he's got some guys around that said, we can beat this.
Sure.
We can beat this.
For the school that covered up all of his indiscretions.
For years.
Probably more than ever became public.
Correct. So I don't know if it's open and shut, but the people I talked to yesterday said, oh, yeah, they're going to have to settle with him just from the way they went
about
it.
He's asking for, what, $30 million or something insane
like
that?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And the Diamondbacks, as we're sitting here, nothing would surprise me now with the Diamondbacks. Nothing would surprise me. If it comes across that A.J. Pollock has been traded to the Atlanta Braves for Shelby Miller, I'm fine with that. I am. They need more pitching. You have to give up all-star outfielders to get big results. It would not surprise me to see Archie Bradley go. I would not be surprised by that. I think I'd be surprised if Corbin went. I'd be surprised if De La Rosa went. I'd be surprised if Robbie Ray went. That's just me. But I think they still need another starter. They're chasing Jose Hernandez. This morning it came out that the Diamondbacks did talk to the Marlins, as Pedro said yesterday, but that the Marlins wanted two frontline starters and top minor league prospect. Diamondbacks said no thanks. It's all rhetoric. It's Tuesday at the winter meetings. You still have two more days to go. So, I can talk about something here at 18 minutes after the hour, and by 22 after the hour, it can all change. That's just how it is when you're at the winter meetings. Actually, I wish we were there this year. There's so much going on. Our TV show is tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. You can check that out, too. Brad Sussmatz, Football AZ. Peter King joins us next. SI.com, senior NFL writer. The Monday morning quarterback. Red Hot Cardinals meeting the Vikings. But Peter's a huge baseball fan, too. We'll Skype in Peter. I want to talk to Peter about the Greinke signing, the dollars within baseball versus guys like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. He wrote about that earlier this week a little bit in his Monday morning quarterback column. That's next. Joins us now, weekly segment, the Monday morning quarterback, the best NFL and even college and pro football and high school football, football aplenty at the MMQB. They go a lot of different directions. He joins us for a couple of minutes. I'm actually going to start with baseball because I saw a little note from you about the Greinke signing versus Aaron Rodgers, and it may have been along the lines of baseball players making more than football players. I know there's been a lot of reaction to that. Out here, Greinke gets $200 million. Is a baseball player, Peter, in your view, and you're a baseball fan, more valuable than a football player?
Well, the note I had in my column the other day, note I had on Monday, Brad, was that the combined guaranteed money in the current contracts of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers combined is $87 million. And Jeff Samardzija, who's, I think, 11 and 18 or something like that the last 2 years or whatever he is, his guaranteed money is $90 million in his current contract. And it's just, that's baseball. It's obviously it's apples and oranges, but I think the difference right now and the reason why people kind of make fun of that, and look, I follow the Red Sox very closely. And, I've been a fan since I was a little kid growing up in Connecticut. But, the David Price contract seems totally insane. Signing a guy who's going to be 31 next year to a contract averaging $31 million a year for 7 years. And it is insane. But as a friend of mine who I work with at NBC told me, he said, listen, the reason that this is happening is because the local television market and the local rights fees that they're getting from NESN, they have to be a competitive team that is playing competitive baseball August and September, or else, their ratings are just going to die. They're going to dive bomb, and then they're going to lose money, and they can't have that. So in other words, I have no idea what the television implications of Zach Greinke are, but that has to be somewhat of a factor that, if you're just going to be filler in July, August, and September, and going to really have awful ratings, that's got to have some impact on the rights fees that a local team like the Diamondbacks is going to get.
Well, I'll tell you the number. $1.5 billion with a B is what the Diamondbacks and the Fox Sports Arizona Regional Network agreed to last February. $1.5 billion.
For how many years?
I don't know the number, but I know that's the number that was agreed to. So they're not done. When Zach Greinke signed, I'll get over the football stuff in a minute, but when Greinke signed, and he signed with Arizona. You're a big baseball guy. I mean, you'll drop in on a World Series game during football season when you're out riding. What was your reaction?
Well, I mean, my reaction is probably like the cranky old get off my lawn guy that I am. You know, sometimes I seem like Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino, you know, when I talk about money and salaries and everything. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know that teams really have learned their lesson because, I mean, look, the Yankees are just totally rolling their eyes now about their money, the money they're stuck with guys like CC Sabathia and to some degree with Jacoby Ellsbury,
right?
Because he's been an injury prone guy. But again, look, in my opinion, I'll just do the Greinke thing as an example. Look,
sure.
Every time that I'm in the Valley during the season and the Diamondbacks are home, if there's any possible way I can go to a game, I'll go to a game. And I remember a couple of years ago, I was there, maybe 3 years ago, I was there late August and in the midweek, and I went to a game maybe on a Wednesday night. And that was one of the most dead – that was such a dead place.
Yep.
You know, Chase Field, I think. And I just felt like – and it was another – you know, they were 20 below 500 and they were playing the Padres who were 30 below 500. And, you know, it's almost like you got to be a glutton for baseball punishment, you know, to sit through nine innings. And I love it because I love going to ball games. But I can see why the Diamondbacks did this and why Tony La Russa would have wanted to do this, because clearly, you know, you're in this to win. Mm-hmm. You're not just in it to put a product on the field to open the doors, say, hey, we have baseball. Tony La Russa would just vomit at that. You know, winning is a part of his genes. He's got to win. So I understand why they did it. And I can't say, boy, that was dumb to pay this guy $1 million per start. It's just that's just the way sports are right now.
Peter King, the Monday Morning Quarterback, joins us for his weekly segment. The Cardinals win at St. Louis. They do it impressively. I think these are the last couple of weeks games that are evolving games down this stretch where we're going to find out Thursday about the Vikings. But just the last couple of weeks, they haven't been aesthetically pretty in some areas. But I'll tell you what, impressive to me that they're just still rolling this late into the season without a hiccup.
Well, I think, and again, I was at sort of the game I would consider to be a little bit of, I don't know, maybe the line of demarcation game. Because remember, and I'm talking about the game against Cleveland a month ago or right, 5 weeks ago, whatever. Remember, they're coming off the Monday night game where against Baltimore, where you're, that game could have gone either way. And then the Cleveland game, they turn it over a bunch. At halftime, they're behind. And I think since the second half of that game, when you think about it, they totally steamrolled the Browns. Then they go to Seattle and have that big win, you know, where they go toe-to-toe and really play well offensively. And then, you know, they go toe-to-toe again with Andy Dalton and the Bengals, and they beat the Bengals. And then the last 2 weeks, two tough defenses, and they survive those games. And to me, I believe that that right now, I mean, I think Arizona, I mean, to me, I just see an Arizona-Carolina NFC championship game, obviously probably in Charlotte. And I think it'll be a fantastic matchup. That's a game that I really, really would like to see just because of all the subplots. I mean, the two teams that probably you'd be surprised to think that they could be in the championship game, but two teams that are playing extremely well right now, and two teams that one of which, I mean, how surprising is it? I mean, Carolina has been just explosive offensively. So I don't know. I think all signs are pointing up for Arizona.
This is not a team now that is getting hot late in the season. This is just a really good team, and I think there is a difference. We see some teams, Peter, you've seen it through the years, and I have as well, where they just start figuring things out late. They've been more than consistent, I think. There's always pimples you could poke at, but I think they're a consistently good football team now. They've grown up this year.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, the one thing that I think that you've got to hand to Arians and Keim, at least the way I look at it, you know, they've built enough quality depth in the roster that, I mean, look, who's going to lose the two top running backs in 1 week and then still be okay the next week? And again, look, there's no question in anybody's mind that if you lose Johnson and Ellington, that's a big blow. But then, you know, the other Johnson comes up and what do you have, 99 yards against the Rams? And now, I mean, obviously the offensive line is being good enough so that I think a Johnson slash Williams tandem or even Stephan Taylor, I think they're going to be able to survive that kind of thing. And again, that's what you want to do if you're Steve Keim. And if you're Bruce Arians, you want to build a roster so that you can afford to have a couple of injuries. And look, you can't afford five injuries at a position, but if you get two in any one position and still can keep it going, I mean, that's when you know you've built quality depth into your roster.
A couple quick questions for you before we let you go. Peter King, the Monday morning quarterback. Bigger game for the Vikings or Cardinals on Thursday night in your view?
Much bigger for the Vikings. I mean, the Vikings totally got slapped in the face on Sunday. And what's tough for them is I think Norv Turner doesn't trust his running game enough that if they get down a couple of scores – they're just going to keep blindly feeding Adrian Peterson. And so I think the first quarter of this game is monstrously important because I think that if the Cardinals get up and get up big early, you're going to force Minnesota into doing something that they don't want to do, and that's throwing the ball a lot. But again, I mean, Turner is determined that he's going to use Teddy Bridgewater. If he needs to come from 14 down early, then he's going to put it in Teddy Bridgewater's hands, not Adrian Peterson's.
And before we let you go, what is your view of Adrian Peterson this year? I mean, he was killing it, and then last week the Seahawks just ran right over him.
I mean, look, I think that he's the best back in football. Mm-hmm. But I think that he's in an offense that's a little bit odd for him, okay? And what I mean by that is that he's used to being the eye back. He's used to being the classic sort of NFL running back. And a lot of times, obviously, they're going to use the shotgun more than half the time in Minnesota. And so I think what they're going to do is they're still trying to make that adjustment, Brad, to make sure that that Peterson touches the ball enough. And I think sometimes it's difficult for them. I think the Vikings are best when Peterson's carrying it 25, 28 times a game, and they're going to win when he's doing that. So that's why I think that it's important for Arizona to get up early to try to make Teddy Bridgewater the go-to guy.
Appreciate your time. As always, Peter, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Brad.
So let's put a bow, at least on the regular season, for Arizona State, the state of college football, and much more with two guys that I have a great deal of respect for and you guys listen to or read or take in some form or fashion every day. And that would be Doug Howler from AZ Central Sports and Chris Cartman from SunDevilSource.com. All right, Mike Norvell right off the top. Let's start with you, Doug. Mike Norvell leaves. Chris, jump on in. How big a blow to Todd Graham?
I think it's huge, and I know fans are upset about how the offense performed this year. But it's not just that; it's just his fingerprint on the program. He's probably their top recruiter. He's been around these guys for 4 years. I think that's a big void to fill.
significant, especially when you consider there's nobody that's certainly groomed and ready in the wings to take over that spot. He is probably their best or one of their very best recruiters. His relationship with the players is outstanding. I think people are understandably upset with how this season went, but ASU was a top 20 offense 3 years in a row prior to this season.
You guys weren't surprised, though, right? I mean,
no. Why would you be?
Just, well, with the timing. I mean, you would think that this might have happened last year, but the fact that the offense struggled, I wasn't expecting it to happen this year, but I was expecting it to happen soon.
Because, guys, I go back to the Oregon State game last year on the road, that was the breaking point from my view. And I'm not there every day like you guys are, but from my view and from what I had heard, that the Oregon State game and the decision at quarterback at halftime, from there forward, the relationship was never quite the same. Agree, disagree?
I don't think that really had much to do with it. Certainly, Todd Graham and Mike Norvell were not always on the same page with everything, but I think for Mike Norvell, it comes down to what the opportunity was. He looked at Memphis as a great job, and so when a job like that comes available, it's where he's from, it's where he recruits, it's where his wife is from in Arkansas. I think that it was more about him waiting for the situation versus any sort of internal discord that existed.
Yeah, it was a no-brainer with just given everything that Chris just said. He's had opportunities before. He was in the running for Tulsa last year. Arkansas State, I think, was involved. And then, you know, coordinator jobs as far as Auburn and Notre Dame had interest in Mike. So, you know, as soon as I saw the president's tweet, and how often does that happen when a president, you know, sends out a tweet and no one has any idea? Mm-hmm. You know, he tweeted, like, we just hired our football coach. No one had any idea who it was. But I was sitting, I was getting my girl's haircut when that came across. And the first thing I thought of was like, wow, I bet Mike Norvell's involved in that.
Will he be a good head coach?
I think he has some growing to do. If you're out of ASU football practice, Mike Norvell is the soundtrack as far as the coaching staff goes. He is the guy, the energy behind everything. I think he's fine there, but I think he's still, I mean, he's only 34 years old. He's only been a full offensive coordinator since he came to ASU. He was co-offensive coordinator at Pitt. So I think he has some growing to do. But, you know, he's been groomed for this. I mean, if you're in team meetings, you know, Todd Graham is front and center. To his right is Mike Norvell right there. But, you know, I think it might take a couple of years. And it's going to depend on the staff he assembles around him as well.
I was struck by, in his press conference, how much he sounded like Todd Graham. And when you look at a guy like Mike Norvell, he's been under Graham for 8 years now. It's basically his whole professional career. Mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said about spreading your wings, about having more other experiences, about understanding a different viewpoint on the profession. And so those things are he's going to have to learn as he goes. And that's not always easy, especially when you have to make this coaching staff hire for the first time. You're young. There's a lot of possible mistakes that can be made along the way, possible pitfalls. I do think he has the energy, though, and the right type of personality to be able to overcome some of those things.
You two both have covered Todd Graham in really, really good times. This was the first year where it wasn't good. How different was he?
I don't think he was different at all. I mean, and that's kind of surprising. Last year, after the UCLA game, he got a little testy. And I remember after the USC game, when they won on the Hail Mary, he made a little comment under his breath, like, are there any stupid questions this week? So it got to him a little bit. This year, I think he realized early that they had some issues. And I felt like at least dealing with us, he was good. And even with the fan criticism, which at times I thought got a little out of control, you know, he acknowledged it and he understood it. And I thought he handled it pretty well.
He's a supremely self-confident person, almost where that might end up being his flaw.
His downfall.
Right. Because, I mean, if you look at this last game against Cal, they struggled mightily on defense. They probably the worst team in the country at giving up big plays. And yet his answer to questions about his approach was, if we did it the other way, we would have lost worse.
Go find somebody else.
Objectively,
I mean, that was crazy.
Right. Objectively, I don't think that's necessarily true. But so I don't think he was different, because when they're really close and they don't make it, that's a different sort of a vibe from Todd Graham than knowing that you're not going to have that opportunity. So I think he was more just accepting of the fact that this was going to be a transitional type of a year.
Yeah, he is set in his ways. Is he going to change his defense? No. I asked him that a couple of years ago, and he said, you know, I'll go down with the ship. And, you know, that he believes in this system. I'm not sure he had the personnel to play it this year, and I think the numbers reflect that. But, you know, I don't see him changing what he does defensively. I don't think even with a new offensive coordinator, ASU is going to change much offensively.
Okay, so from there, let's move to on the field. Let's start with the seniors first. Combine comes up in February. Who do you guys, when you look at this roster, say that's an NFL player, no question, no doubt, that is going to be the guy on draft day?
Antonio Longino. I think he probably played out of position as a double backer. I think he's more of an inside linebacker. Maybe he could play outside in some 3-4 schemes at the next level. I've really liked him since the day he got to ASU. I think he's improved pretty consistently. I think he has the right type of disposition. He's got a really good chance. This is a team that doesn't have a lot of NFL talent on it, quite frankly. I think there's some other guys that may get opportunities.
Why is that?
I think that this, for whatever reason, this ended up being kind of their transitional year. When they first got hired, they brought in a lot of JUCO talent. Some of those guys, Demaryius Randall, Marcus Hardison, they've made it to the lead. Jalen Strong, right? Mm-hmm. I think that their initial high school classes were more cobbled together. A lot of those guys weren't the elite talent that they're starting to recruit more recently from the high school ranks. I like some of their younger players a lot better than I'd like some of their older players. But they were a senior-led group, as you know. Todd Graham thought they had the culture in place that was going to be successful. Ultimately, they didn't really have enough talent in order to do that. I also look at Mike Bercovici as a guy who they didn't recruit. He wasn't necessarily their pick as a quarterback, but yet they missed on Josh Dobbs on signing day. Yep. And so it all just kind of came together. There's other guys that are getting opportunities. Obviously, Christian Westerman's probably going to get an opportunity. I'm not as high on his prospects as a professional player. Devin Lucien came on really big at the end of the season. Maybe he gets an opportunity. There's guys across the roster, but I don't think anybody really has the type of potential of Longino.
What about yourself?
Yeah, I agree with Longino, and I mean, what a great story he is in his 3 years at the program, because he was at times early in his career, it seemed like almost after every practice those first couple of months, he was having heart-to-hearts with Paul Randolph just because things were moving so fast for him. But I would start with him. I think Christian Westerman does have a chance to get drafted. The only other guy I think maybe, I think Nick Kelly might be able to latch on somewhere as an undrafted free agent perhaps. But I do agree with Chris. I do think maybe on down the line there might be some NFL talent that's just getting started within the program. But at this point, not a lot.
Who's the quarterback to open the season next year?
I think they'll start with Manny Wilkins just out of seniority. But, you know, based off what I saw earlier in the year when practices were open a little bit more, I thought Bryce Perkins was the best quarterback out there.
I envision a scenario in which you have two or three guys playing early next season. I really could see that happening as you go through the non-conference to really make sure that you make the right decision. In bowl practices, they've had two so far. I think Manny Wilkins has probably been the best of the three guys. Brady White, though, is very talented, and I think he fits the offense better than people maybe realize who think he's not athletic enough or mobile enough. I don't think that's really going to be that much of an issue, but I would lean towards saying Perkins.
Okay, is this just a one-year anomaly? Or are there storm clouds on the horizon for Arizona State football? Is it nothing more than ASU is a mirage in the middle of the desert where every so often they're going to be really good, but they're in the South, so it's always going to be USC. It's always going to be UCLA. And ASU is always going to be just about this. Was this just a one-year blip, Doug?
That's a great question. And with the back-to-back 10-win seasons, you thought this thing was going to start, heading up. After this season, with everything that they lose, I think next year is going to be also kind of a transitional year. I really think everything at this point is geared toward 2017. But as of right now, if we're sitting here next year discussing the season, I wouldn't be surprised if we're in the 6-win, 7-win area.
2017 should be better than 2016. I really do like the building of the young talent that they have. I think their last recruiting class is probably the best that we've seen since I've been doing this, at least. They are going to have a freshman quarterback or a sophomore quarterback. That's going to be a new thing that they're going to have to develop. And then when you kick the tires on a new offensive coordinator, maybe even multiple new offensive coaches,
yep,
that's also a big transitional. So I don't think you can expect them to be competing for the playoff or anything like that.
Do you think Ray Anderson, Michael Crow, and the fan base can tolerate another 6-win season? Or do you think that the amplification, you talked earlier about hearing some unrealistic expectations around Todd as the season progressed, I think fan base could handle another 6-win season? Or has Todd built it up so much himself, right?
He has, but I think people – that's how Todd is. I mean, this is a guy who listens to motivational music on his way to work.
Sure.
So I mean, that's he's going to say it the next year. He's going to say, I think this is my best team. He said it the last two or three years. As far as can they handle it, you know, you have to remember that the stadium is under reconstruction. I don't think it would make a whole lot of sense to put everything in place and then make a change right before that. So
I'm not suggesting that, right, but right. From my view, he's doing about as good a job as you can do, given the history that we've seen over there. Everybody talks a big game,
right?
But it's just, you know, sleeping giant and all that. But eventually you have to get through it. And I look at things like Texas Tech early next season without offense against a defense that couldn't stop anybody. And how do you figure that out to go into next season rather than just say, we're going to be better, we're going to be better? Because we're going to hear that all offseason. We're going to hear a lot of rhetoric. But the schedule speaks very loudly about some early season tests. Not that they're the best. Texas Tech isn't the best. I'm just pulling one game out.
Well, we live in such an immediate gratification society, and there's a disconnect, Brad, between what Todd Graham says and what is really the reality of the program. And the Pac-12 South, you have to face it, is really a brutal league. There's been only one
team. The best league?
I think most competitive among the top Power Five schools. When you look at it, mm-hmm. only ASU's lost one game in conference play since the league split. I mean, that's four or five seasons, right? So it's hard to run through that thing without losing a couple games at a minimum. And I think fans, because of what Todd Graham has said, because of the early success that he had, back-to-back 10-win seasons, the way the offense operated, all the statistical success on defense, that put them in a certain frame of mind to have expectations that weren't really realistic. I think as the young talent starts to really kind of build up through the program and billow, they're going to be better. They're going to be more in line with the way Todd Graham talks about the team. But if fans are expecting this to all of a sudden be a perennial top 10 program, the talent isn't like that. It's going to take time.
What do you think? You agree?
Yeah, I agree. And I think the things that made this program succeed in the past, they didn't do this year. I mean, with the ball security issues, the defense. I mean, have you ever seen guys more wide open this year in the last like half of the season?
We have a lot of highlights on this show where they're just running free and there's nobody within 15 yards.
Yeah, it's not like they're open. They are wide open.
Or also, bad tackling angles, all sorts of things.
But there's also I think they were unlucky this year. I think in previous years they had been kind of lucky to have some of their success. This year they're winning in every game in the fourth quarter that they lose in the last six games. Four games they lose, they're winning in the fourth quarter. Now, maybe that's because they can't finish, but maybe that's also because kind of they got unlucky. I think there's more randomness involved than a lot of people probably would care to acknowledge who are fans or even pundits in football. Why did their turnover numbers drop so severely despite the fact that they still had the same number of sacks, tackles for loss? Maybe the quarterback play that they faced was better in that regard. Maybe teams are figuring them out defensively to some regard. I think there needs to be some continued evolution from Todd Graham and thinking about what his scheme is defensively. But I do think that it's still trending. The big picture is trending in the right direction.
Appreciate you guys coming in. Let's do it again sometime. Thanks.
Thanks.
It's Doug Haller, Chris Cartman. Appreciate them on board with us. I'm wondering if the Diamondbacks are working on this deal down in down at the winter meetings more that Pedro talked about yesterday. Pedro Gomez with us yesterday, and the Diamondbacks at the winter meetings, for me, they don't have to do anything else. They don't have to do anything right now. Usually how the flow goes in the off season, you have the big free agent sign. Well, first you have the general manager's meetings in early November, and that's just laying scent. You know, that's just, I'm going to lift on this fire hydrant. You lift on that fire hydrant. Okay, we got it. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're not going to do. And then in mid-November, things start to fall into place. The winter meetings, things really pick up. And then you kind of have the leftovers or the teams that hung in there. And I think, remember a couple of years ago, Eric, there was the Tanaka thing that didn't get settled until, what was it? Like,
yeah, really late in the
it was
process.
January.
I think it was.
Yeah, it was really late. And fortunate for the Diamondbacks, he's had some elbow issues. This one with the Marlins and going after a big-time pitcher whose numbers are amazing. We're not just talking about Zach Greinke here. The Diamondbacks are trying to do more.
And it's official. Zach Greinke has signed. He will be introduced to the media some point on Friday down at Chase Field.
Friday at Chase Field.
Yep.
Friday will be the day.
It's officially official when you get when the email hits your inbox from the Diamondbacks.
And then Christmas jerseys will be everywhere.
That's correct.
They will be everywhere.
So well-timed.
So if you're talking about the biggest deal in Arizona sports, it's Carson Palmer, Larry Fitzgerald, Zach Greinke? Is it?
That doesn't sound right. That just doesn't sound right yet, but get back to me in June when Greinke's 12-1 with an ERA of 1.35.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's Palmer, Matthew, Peterson, Fitzgerald. It's all Cardinals.
Pretty much. The way the Suns are playing.
Oh, no. The Suns aren't even in the equation.
Yeah.
Suns aren't even, they're not even in the top 20. You know, I will say every year I do a column on five names to know in the next year. Devin Booker is in that column already. And if any of you other outlets steal that idea, it's fine. It's fine. Thanks for watching. Devin Booker's in that column, and it's usually emerging stars.
Shane Doan?
No. No, I mean, Domi's in that conversation.
Yes.
So you got to start looking at, it's nothing personal with Shane, okay? Shane's an icon. He's a legend. But if we're talking about the buzz in the Valley right now, I would disagree with you. I think Greinke is in the top three. The Cardinals clearly right now, because they have the Vikings this week, they're in a playoff run, they're getting picked up, they're dominating the news cycle. But I tend to look at the big picture. The big picture is Zach Greinke getting $200 million and coming here. It's just the same as Randy Johnson.
But until he takes the mound, until we see him take the ball on opening night, I mean, that's going to take to a whole nother level.
Well,
people are excited right now. In a month, they may not be as excited. But again, when the season starts, and if the Diamondbacks can get off to a good start, I mean, you know how it is in the summer with the Diamondbacks.
No,
There's nothing else going on. So if they start out hot like last summer and at least stay competitive, they'll have a lot of eyeballs on them.
But I think right now in the circles that I'm in, which is I'm at school with my kid, my youngest. I have college kids. We're involved in our community. So when you just go like over to the neighbor's yard, you'll get the, hey, what do you think about the Cardinals?
Sure.
What I've gotten in the last few days...
Grocery store conversation.
Yeah, the last few days, it's Greinke's coming here, okay? And the women, including my wife, he's hot. So when you start getting the he's hot thing, first of all, it makes you look in the mirror and say, "What? He's just got money. Look at me." No, but in seriousness, when you have that buzz among females, I think there's more buzz about Greinke. Clearly not than the Cardinals. The Cardinals, and rightly so with the Cardinals right now. It's the end of the season. It's the stretch run. But for the first time, the Diamondbacks actually have something going on where outside of Goldschmidt, and Goldschmidt was just a summertime conversation. To your point, okay, when it's baseball season, yeah, we're going to talk about Goldschmidt. Greinke coming here just cranked this whole thing up with that organization. It just did.
And Goldschmidt doesn't even really want to be a spotlight guy.
No.
I mean, his numbers and his talent and his skill make him a spotlight guy, but he's just as happy.
I don't know about Greinke. I didn't ask Pedro. How is he to deal with? I hope he's surly.
I think he is a little bit from what I remember.
I hope he's surly. I don't want a team full of nice guys. I just don't. If you have a team that has some edge to them, some sandpaper to them, you always have to have those type of guys to have a successful team. Okay, like Tyrann Mathieu has some sandpaper about him. Okay, his backstory is just terrific. It's been out there, and he plays reckless. Patrick Peterson is very smooth. He's Fitz-like. He understands the business side of football and communicates in a very professional manner. You're not going to see him show up in all likelihood at TMZ or tweet out that he's at the club running with his guys.
Same with Carson Palmer, a pro's pro.
Well, Carson Palmer is a dad with three kids. He's going to go to work. He's going to show up. He's going to do his thing. He's going to go home. Peter's piece that he did on Carson opened up a lot to me about his ethics, his work ethic. Greinke's not going to be a guy that's going to go out and be out on the town. I don't think. That's not how he strikes me. But this is a great time for us because it's not just the Cardinals. It's not. When you have something like Greinke on Friday, that's a big one that's coming this way. And it may entail more. Like if they traded A.J. Pollock, Eric, A.J. Pollock's a nice name and he's a nice guy and he's an all-star and he's a terrific player. But I'm sorry, he's not going to make people buy more tickets than Greinke pitching every fifth day. He's just not. So if you've got to move him to have somebody alongside of him, like Johnson and Schilling were, then you do it.
And as you mentioned yesterday with Peter, or with Pedro, and I completely agree, it's a lot easier to find a star position player than it is to find a high-end young star pitcher.
Not even a star. They don't even need a star. I mean, they need another bat, okay? If you take Pollock's bat out, yes, that is a concern. But is Tomas better with his bat this coming year? I mean, that's
maybe. We'll see if he doesn't wear down like he did last year.
Sports360AZ.com. That's our website. We have plenty of content up on Sports360AZ.com. We also partner with the Arizona Republic day in and day out. Appreciate the partnership with them. You can find our content all over the place on our site and other media outlets as well that like to pick it up day in and day out. Thanks for being with us.